This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You're listening to iFanboy's Booksplode, Planet Hulk by Greg Pak. Hey everybody, Paul Montgomery here. You're listening to Booksplode, the iFanboy podcast dedicated to a collected edition or longer work. And this time around, it's Planet Hulk. And joining me, Mr. Jim Roszkowski.
Hello, Paul.
And Ryan Haupt.
Hey, Paul, I feel like we need some Foley, like Booksplode.
My job.
And and Timmy Wood.
I'll do the Foley stuff.
Do you have any like celery you can just like, you know, bang against a table? Or I know Timmy's got a whole Foley studio in his closet, so.
I'm like Christopher Lloyd in that Radioland Murders movie.
Exactly. All right, so we read Planet Hulk, which is a storyline that ran through The Incredible Hulk by Greg Pak with a few different artists. And this was concurrent to Marvel's big Civil War event a few years ago. And this is kind of the reason that the Hulk was not in Civil War and sort of showed up at the after Civil War and the aftermath of all that.
That's probably why they did it. Don't you think? Like someone at one of those retreats said, you know, if the Hulk is on the board, whoever has him wins.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever. So they had to gin up some way to get him away. And this certainly does the trick.
And that, how do you have the Hulk sign up for the Registration Act? I mean, everyone knows he's the Hulk. I guess he's right. Already kind of signed up.
I was thinking about that. I mean, which side would he be on if there were like an option?
He wouldn't.
If he picks the registration side, the whole idea behind registration is that he like is making himself financially liable for any damage he does. He submits to training.
So this Banner's choice, right?
Banner would pick side with Stark, and then Hulk would side
exactly.
But Hulk just wants to be left alone. So I can't. Oh,
This whole thing was a wasted opportunity. They did this was a bad idea for
Hulk
them.
Hulk would have been a great like Ralph Nader of this like right. A great third
he just wants everyone to
independent
wear a seatbelt?
Party. Yeah.
Ryan, why was the Hulk in outer space?
The Hulk was in outer space because there was a satellite that was bad, and Hulk smashed bad satellite, and then the Illuminati, the group now being kind of reunited in one of Hickman's Avengers books.
New Avengers,
there
right?
You go. They said, well, Hulk also bad, so we should while he's in space, let's take the opportunity to put him in further away space. So they let him smash the satellite for them, do the dirty work, and then decided to launch him as far away as they could get him.
Exactly. So and the Illuminati are, I mean, basically Hulk's best friends or who are supposed to be Bruce Banner's best friends.
Right. Yeah. It seemed spearheaded by Reed. Reed's always the face that comes up on the screen as the one talking directly to the Hulk and being, you know, as sympathetic as is possible. And the plan was to send him to a nice, a nice planet where he could just romp around being hulky. And apparently there was a what if where he actually made it to the right planet.
So like a Hulk sanctuary, and they talk about being
right.
like grassy and lush, and there being, you know, game for him to hunt and eat, and
a Hulk preserve.
In the what if, I read a little bit of this on Wikipedia. Apparently when he in the what if where he makes it to the preserve, everything in the planet is forced to evolve to adapt to him because he's this driving force of everything that can happen on the world. And so eventually the world becomes a place where Hulk is just a normal being, if not slightly underpowered relative to everything else.
So this is over a really long period of time?
Evolution can happen pretty quick if there's something like okay. a Hulk forcing it.
You see, when you write a what if, it tends to reinforce the value of rules and limits. Because when the writer can do whatever he wants, sometimes he goes to crazy town.
Mm.
And if you read the ones from the 70s, that's mostly what they do.
Well, the what-ifs always have like endings, too, that the regular comics never have. So that's always what's weird for me, is that half the times the what-if ends better. And you're just like, well, crap, man, they should have just done that, because that's everybody's happy at the end of this. So I don't know.
So instead of ending up there, the Hulk goes through sort of a wormhole to a not-so-hospitable planet. And if you've seen movies like Gladiator or John Carter, it's very similar to what happens there. He's a fish out of water and becomes a gladiator and forms a war bond with some other warriors from other alien races that we've seen in other Marvel books. There's some Brood in there, and there's some Rocky looking guys. And he becomes a gladiator and very quickly goes up the ranks and ends up becoming like the champion of the downtrodden on this planet and fights the Pinkies, which is, again, it's and sort of like the John Carter thing where you've got the red Martians and the green many armed guys. In this case, it's a race of sort of insectoid aliens who are part of a hive mind, and he finds love, and that's the overall storyline. So that's just to give you sort of the gist of what it is. Let's talk about what we liked and didn't like. Jim, you're a Hulk fan, right?
I am a Hulk fan. For one thing, I'm glad that I read this before John Carter came out,
mm-hmm.
because I like it a lot more. I liked it a lot more before I could see all those very clear similarities. But besides that, yeah, I've always been a big Hulk fan, and people who remember Bill Bixby and, you know, basically nothing else tend to think that there's the problem with the Hulk is that there's really only one Hulk story, when in fact, if you have put in the time and read him over the years, you find that the writers are driven to desperation by the fact that there's only so much you can do with the Hulk. And so they end up doing stuff like this, and they end up doing wilder things to him than almost any other character. Like, Doctor Strange has tried to cure him before by sending him to another dimension without his brain. And, you know, they've tried splitting him up. They've tried merging all of his personalities into one being. And if you're Reed Richards and you've watched all this happen, yeah, I'm sure you do want to, you know, the hell with it. We'll launch him into space and put him on planet Bleep Blorp or something, and won't have to. The idea of staging an intervention is about, you know, 10 or 20 years out of date for this guy. So
I figured out how to cure the Hulk.
Yeah.
Did you?
I did. I'm not gonna talk about it. It's my storyline I've got in my pocket. When Marvel comes right. to me and says, okay. Ryan, what's your Hulk story? Boom, I've got it. I'll tell you guys off air, but I'm saving.
That's cool. That's fair. I look forward to that. Yeah. So is this so Jim, this being I think the big thing about this, and one of the reasons, so there was this rumor that this might be a storyline in the next Hulk movie for the Marvel Cinematic Universe, whatever, phase two, phase three, wherever it's gonna fall. The problem with this is that there's very little Bruce Banner in this story.
Yeah,
is that a problem for you story-wise, even beyond it being a good idea?
It's a problem for me in the comics, because right. I've always been very hung up on like, I don't care what the Hulk rules are, but I want Hulk rules to exist. Like, as a reader, I want to know the conditions that cause him to turn into the Hulk, why he, you know, what his powers are, what his intelligence is at any given moment. And the over the past few years until really probably this Mark Waid takeover, it's been whatever the writer wants it to be, changing even from issue to issue.
But even then, like, I would still be very fine with that if the writer kind of told us as well up front. Like, I don't mind that the Hulk rules change from writer to writer to serve the story they're telling. I mean, I feel like the same with Doctor Strange. Like, his type of powers can manifest. It's magic, so it can manifest how the writers want to use it. But just, like, just let me know which Hulk we're going to be using. So I don't, like Bruce Banner barely appears in this story.
Yeah, and that's, which is, by the way, why it wouldn't work as a movie. Because the thing that was good about the Hulk and Avengers was Mark Ruffalo. And as I've seen pointed out on the web recently, Mark Ruffalo has like a 6-picture deal for the Hulk. So they're going to use him. And I doubt they're going to use him covered in ping pong balls in a giant green room for the sake of, you know,
how continuity. Ironic.
Yeah, right.
Okay. But for the book itself.
For the book itself.
Is it a problem? Do you just wish there was, you know, half and half?
Banner well, no, and Hulk, I or? Mean, I don't even, he... At the time, I just wanted to know where Bruce was. And like, because, you know, the Hulk was in a high stress situation. He was under the kind of anxiety and pressure that would cause him to turn into a giant green monster. But then at the end of the day, he gets, you know, crowned king of the rebels and he's sleeping with pretty ladies and he's sleeping, period.
Right.
So, you know, I think it was Ryan who had the genius breakthrough that I wish I had been talking to Ryan when I was reading this in the first place.
Don't you say that with most books you read, though?
Oh, yes. but in this particular case, it was that maybe the atmosphere isn't oxygen on that planet. Bada bing.
Yeah, I mean, it's entirely possible.
Greg Pak has to do.
Yeah, Bruce just can't survive, so he has to stay Hulk. And that, I mean, that to me, the reason I like my own theory is that... Hulk is, in this book, more intelligent than he's usually portrayed as on Earth, and not quite as all-powerful. Like, he gets stabbed, his skin gets broken. You know, he can take machine gun fire on Earth, but here on this alien planet, he can get stabbed with blades and things like that. So my working theory was that Hulk's not actually that angry, he's just keeping Bruce alive. So because he's not that angry, he's not as strong, and he's a lot more intelligent.
And also, it's a dangerous planet too. There's all these other unknown creatures that are around trying to kill.
Yeah, there are the zombie spikes and the, you know.
There's the there's Meek and his hive mind family, and it's a bizarre, crazy planet. So I feel like that even if you didn't use the oxygen, even if you didn't use Ryan's wonderful oxygen.
I didn't say oxygen. I just said the planet itself could be. Not super.
You could use the theory that the Hulk is always in danger in that planet, so you will always have to say Hulk.
So like, it would be like if Spider-Man were on the planet, his spider sense would be tingling the entire time.
Exactly, it'd be tingle, tingle. It'd be like his foot fell asleep.
See, I always felt like
so ants crawling over your feet.
I felt like with Spider-Man though, the spider sense is more like smell, where if you're around something bad, it fades if you just are around it for a little bit,
okay.
Right?
Because
otherwise,
well, if we do Spider Island next, we can talk about that. Yeah, this kills me because this is the closest I've ever been to a no prize in my life, and they don't hand them out anymore. my heart is breaking.
Okay, well, let me ask you guys this then. Okay, so since there's no Bruce Banner and it isn't explicitly stated as you seem to that you would have liked, why
you've got to hold my hand, Paul.
do you like the way Hulk himself is portrayed?
Yes, he's true to that whole he's just the Ziggy of the Marvel universe. Nothing ever goes right for the Hulk, and all he wants is to be left alone, as was alluded to earlier. And I think that's why he's my very favorite, because he's just, everybody's trying to cure him. Everybody's trying to stop him. And not one of them in 50 years has ever just tried being nice to him and leaving him alone. And his friends try to send him on vacation, you know, to a spa planet or something. And of course, he gets a flat tire and ends up in the middle of nowhere with people stabbing him. And just of all the other planets he could have fallen on, he falls on the one that, like, Fear Agent would never go anywhere near. Like, and just he just cannot catch a break to save his life. And his attitude the whole time sort of reflects that. He literally is like, if I have to conquer this planet and kill everyone on it to get some goddamn peace and quiet, then that is exactly what I'm going to do. And that is basically what drives the story and what resonates for me.
Yeah, it snowballs the entire time. And, yeah. And the pacing, I think my biggest criticism with the book is that the pacing is so quick. Even though it's a lot of issues, it's like a 400.
Now, Paul, I know you're in the middle of something. We actually need to move on to the next topic now. That was right. Meta.
So even though it's like 400 pages and it went for over a year, it just seems like it moves so fast and just to get to that point. But that also, I think, adds to the fact that once the Hulk, you know, gets through one challenge, another one lands at his feet. And you know, it's all insult to injury because even if the Illuminati succeeded in what they wanted to do, they're still banishing him to another planet. And that's, you know, supposedly his best friends doing this.
And really, they didn't have to make that video. I feel like that kind of just really, they didn't have to, that's what really bit them in the ass.
He would have never known.
He would have just assumed this bad wormhole did it. He would have thought, and then they could have come and rescued him. The Illuminati needed like some PR people on their side.
I'm surprised. Yeah. Like if Tony had been front man or a point man for this instead of Reed, I'm sure Tony could have marketed it better, because when you said the whole like sending him on a forced vacation, they should have played up that angle. They should have been like, Hulk, you won the Avengers raffle contest that we had right. When you were up fixing that satellite. And now you get an all expenses paid trip to this beautiful, luscious planet.
But we all have friends like this. Friends who wrong us, and then instead of apologizing, they explain how what they did wasn't actually that bad, and they're sorry if your feelings were hurt by being tricked onto a rocket and sent to your death.
But it's like they had an intervention for him without him even being there. Like they had an intervention via satellite, and there's nothing he could do to, you know, he there was no opportunity for him to voice his own, you know,
right
opinion about this. They already decided it for him.
But rehab does not work unless the person you're sending wants to go.
Right. And I keep coming back to the you know, that part of the story, because I think it's far more interesting than what the story actually is, which is, you know, the gladiator thing. We mentioned that it's very similar to other stories that we've seen. Timmy, what did you like or not like about this?
Well, your overall
impression.
I think it's a cool story, but I think it's back to what you were kind of saying about the pacing. Like, there's some storytelling issues that I have with it that it kind of make it not easy to read, at least not in one big long chunk like I did before the podcast. So, like, it's a cool story. It's a great idea. Like, I think you said once that this was like a Quesada's idea, and like, he pitched it to Pack, and Pack wrote it and fleshed it out.
I think it was Joe Quesada's initial concept that they were going to do this, and then he gave it to Pack, and then Pack came up with sort of the mythology of this world and the characters on it. So he ran with it. Yeah.
So like conceptually, it's a really cool idea, and it's really cool that they take aspects of the Marvel universe that are kind of no one really knows about, and or not no one, but like they reinvent them, like a Brood or the Rock guy, who's from like a Thor issue that mm-hmm. Jack Kirby drew. And like, it's all these cool ideas, but then there's some issues they just jam pack way too much in. And then some issues where like the Silver Surfer shows up that aren't really necessary at all. And
that was I love that issue. That was totally necessary.
I love the idea that the Silver Surfer is in there, but he shows up and then he's gone. Leaves. And he serves. Yeah. It feels like a plot contrivance.
He frees them. Yeah. It's Deus Ex Silver Surfer. He frees them all from the impossible control discs. And Silver Surfer, it's because it's just that one issue. If Silver Surfer stuck around, it's game over, right? It's because he's just too powerful.
Mr. Cosmic Power Man.
Right, right. I've often, so I kind of see the Fanboy guys in the Pick of the Week podcast often talk about the last page Punisher reveal and how that's always the oh crap moment when you realize the Punisher's about to be introduced and stuff's just going to go crazy. And I feel like in a cosmic story, the Silver Surfer fills that role where when the Silver Surfer shows up, stuff's getting way more serious and way more intense. And hopefully, I mean, a story can't really sustain that intensity for long. So it's good that he surfs off, I guess.
And just that is just the way life is. You get stranded on the other side of the universe. And of all the people you could run into, who should show up? But that guy who was in your frat with Doctor Strange and Nighthawk and... You know, and what are the odds?
Who got that job that big corporation that just soulless?
Well, it's limit. His powers are limited for a while. He's got this brace on him, and he's a slave for a while. But so they could have, brought that out a bit more, because there seemed to be a lot of momentum. Like they do like a Silver Surfer origin story.
Yeah.
And then
no better time to do that.
Well, I think the other reason the Silver Surfer worked for me is because the animated Brain Trust did the Planet Hulk animated movie that came out a couple years ago. And in that, they don't use Silver Surfer. I imagine there's some weird rights reason for that, but they use Beta Ray Bill, who I have zero connection to as a character. I mean, he's weird looking and served his purpose. But so the reveal of the Silver Surfer was a legitimate surprise to me. Which is such a rare thing to actually happen in comics these days.
I'm on the opposite, side of the fence, because I'm a big fan of Walt Simonson's Thor, so I have a great affection for Beta Ray Bill, and he's even crazier. And even the Silver Surfer is a really weird, out there idea, but Beta Ray Bill just like takes the cake. He's a horse skull alien with a really, really weird name, and he's a Thor spinoff, and even still like there's all this pathos, and it's just I actually thought Beta Ray Bill was a really interesting way to spice up that animated movie, and he was probably the best part. It was the best animated part.
And it pairs well with the Gamma Monsters, Beta Gamma.
Yeah. So pacing seems to be one of the big concerns, and then also just the fact that it's derivative of other things.
But at the time, didn't seem derivative. It was just kind of, it was exciting. I know lots of people that loved this when it came out. It isn't until like I reread a lot of Adam Strange and then John Carter that I was like, oh, this is like all very pulling from like Burroughs lore.
Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted Ryan. Yeah, but I'm not sorry about that, but I just pointed out that I knew that I interrupted it.
You had a relevant point.
Now I will allow him to speak.
You had a relevant point, and I'm glad you said it, because I'm taking us in a different direction. I want to talk about how much I loved the Ladrone covers.
They're great.
That might have been, I think, because those were the thing... That was my conception of Planet Hulk coming into this, having not... So I, full disclosure, I didn't read this story when it was coming out. I read it just in a couple of sittings while preparing for this podcast. And,
same for me.
And I think one of my favorite things was the Ladrone covers. They were consistent the entire way through, and they were just gorgeous. And I really, really liked the picture they painted. Whereas the art itself, it was, it was yeoman. It was serviceable. It was a little inconsistent at times. The storytelling sometimes didn't quite work, but the covers were always just superb.
I have no idea what the cover artist is doing now, but I miss Aaron Lopresti with my whole heart. On books that I read. I don't even know where he is now. Or any of you for that matter.
No, I was trying to think that.
There you go.
No, it was Aaron Lopresti, it was Carlo Pagulian. There's a little bit of Gary Frank in there.
There's one issue where they rounded up a bunch of artists that they Marvel had short leashes on and got them to do like a two-page part of the story where they cover like everyone gets an origin story in this in this mini or this
Max. Oh yeah, that was where they had Mike Allred doing the Rock guy.
Core is his name. Can someone look up the Rock guy's name that we all forgotten? Obviously,
it seems to me that it is Core.
Core.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Rock Core. See, I'm a geologist, so that actually means something because rock cores are a thing that happens.
What do you think about the Meek character? Because I think that's sort of if there's like a breakout star or at least most noticeable character, depending on what you think about him.
Yeah, at first he's really...
There's a G, guys. Korg.
It's Korg? Okay. Yeah.
That's right.
Well, at first Meek, I feel like, is really into Jar Jar Binks territory in the beginning. And he's not the most fun character to read on the page. But then once he goes through his metamorphoses...
Well, we should say who he is. So he's an insectoid, a humanoid insect thing that's one of the natives of this planet.
How and he ended up a gladiator. Member.
Yeah. the weakest member of the war bond.
Physically the weakest, but he's the Rudy. He's got the biggest heart.
Right. He's sort of like the, in quotations, comic relief.
And he's the last of his hive mind. Too, right, like that's an important distinction.
I feel like he's kind of the glue because he's the one who really wants them to be a group, you know. Otherwise,
he's the last person you would ever suspect to do anything shady. So
right, and as it turns out, he's the one sort of behind, or is one of the catalysts for World War Hulk, which is where this is all headed.
I guess the ship has sailed on the spoiler warning.
Yeah, sorry about that. Years gone, but this was the, you know, the other shoe dropping for the Illuminati and for the whole Marvel universe after they're sort of divided and hurting after Civil War. Hulk comes back in surfing on the outside of his spaceship. That's the other thing. If the Hulk can survive in, you know, the vacuum of space, couldn't he have just like jumped off the sanctuary that they sent him to and like dog paddled through space? Back
you can't dog paddle through
I know
space.
You can't, but he could do something. He could have hopped like from
planet to
asteroid,
planet.
Could
have planet hops. Yeah.
I'm not sure Hulk. Well, so they never. Hulk, it's never been established if Hulk could get angry enough to reach escape velocity.
It never came up.
Are you sure?
I think we're getting a hint at what Ryan's Hulk book is.
No, actually, yeah. That has nothing to do with my Hulk book. It's a new idea I've just had now, but it's, I don't know that Hulk could reach escape velocity just jumping. It's,
he'd have to be like, he'd have to like get a running start. And
you would have found a way. But anyways, by the end of this book, he is surfing on the outside of this spacecraft and they're headed back to Earth to get revenge. Because the something happens with Meek where he allows the ship to blow up and it destroys pretty much everything, including Hulk's wife, the old strong
Hera, right?
Right. What did you guys think of Hulk having a lady friend?
I mean, James Bond got married once too. Just forget. Yeah.
You know, during one of the many Hulk stories that nobody ever thinks about because they think there's only one, Hulk got shrunk down to some version of the Microverse or some corner of the Microverse and had an arc very similar to this where he met and bedded another green lady, which I think even gets referenced a couple of times in this one. So it's impossible to make him happy, but if you have to be tortured and enslaved and betrayed by your friends, you should at least get a girlfriend out of it. I don't
get married and be that way. Yeah. I think it's fine too. Mainly because I knew she was about to get killed in like three issues.
Was that just you being cynical or are you knowing how the story ends?
Just knowing how the story ends, not being cynical.
Do you think it's, well, I don't want to say unfair, but do you, because it's, I mean, of course it's unfair and it's cruel to him and to her character, but do you think it's kind of, I don't know, cruel or unbalanced to introduce a character just for her to die at the end?
She had some good moments. She had that moment where I liked her arc because she originally is working for the Red King, who is the Joaquin Phoenix of this storyline.
Right.
From Gladiator, not from...
Right.
Well, maybe from The Master, but, you know, not from any of his other movies or real life. No rap career for the Red King is what I'm saying. So
Not yet.
And so she kind of, as the story progresses, sees just how much of a bastard this guy really is. We haven't really talked about the spikes, which are the kind of zombie parasite of this world.
The xenomorph.
They're
kind of like a mixture between xenomorphs, the sandworms from Dune, and like
zombies
and zombies. Yeah.
Cause they infect you and they turn you all spiky. And so, you know, when she kind of finds out that the Red King has been using those as a weapon and he ends up bombing, you know, firebombing an entire city Dresden style, and she's holding a child that gets turned to ash. Like those I thought were some pretty interesting moments for her character, and it made her arc away from working for the Red King and joining up with Hulk and the Warbound make sense. And I liked that. The one thing that I thought was really lacking from her storyline was there is a brief interlude where Hulk allows Bruce to come out for a few minutes to meet her, and they don't really follow up on that. And I think I wanted to see the rest of that conversation.
Well, and also part of the reason why I think like I don't care that she's killed off and that she is purely a catalyst for World War Hulk, is because she's not really, doesn't have much of a personality either. I at least I don't think so. I mean, she's kind of a one note. A lot of these characters are kind of one note.
There's a lot of archetypes.
Yeah. And they're there just to serve that archetype for this kind of story, which I'm fine with. If you pulled almost all these characters, except for maybe the Brood, I would read that Brood story. And I would read a Korg, story as well.
Yeah, I like
Korg. If you pulled the Old Strong, and gave her her own book, I wouldn't care.
Well, there's two of the shadow people. There's like a shadow. So there's the pink skin, red skinned people whom the Red King is the leader of. And then there's this subgroup of them called the Shadow People that are kind of these warrior monk types.
Highlander type.
Right. Yeah. And one of them is Heroim, is a member of the Warbound, and he just does nothing. I mean, he just exists. He fights from time to time, but as a character, nothing.
Yeah, I'd actually completely forgot about him. All I remember is that he's praying at one point, and they're like, he's taking an oath of silence during prayer.
Yeah, and then
He looked like Christopher Lambert from Highlander.
Right, and then at one point he's not silent anymore, and life goes on.
But this has never occurred to me before now. As much as what Tim has wisely said is true, does anyone ever call you Tim? Did I just do something wrong?
My wife and my parents.
Okay.
And you're,
see, so, my parents call me Jimmy, and if anybody else did that, I wouldn't even realize they were talking to me. But so anyway.
You're a presumptuous sir.
Yeah, so it would seem. The trend continues apace. What I was going to say is Timmy just made me realize that we always talk about how creators save new characters and new ideas for their own independent books, and that there are never any new characters coming out of a Marvel or a DC. But the Hulk is the only pre-existing character in this entire story. And now that I think about it, they tried pretty hard to make these other guys happen.
Korg was pre-existing.
That's true.
And the Brood too. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Brood as a species, yeah. Right.
I am not on trial here. Having said all that, and not that the Korg character wasn't a fully fleshed out three-dimensional creation of Jack Kirby's and Thor 2 or whatever, but they came to Earth with him for World War Hulk. Marvel, I'm almost positive, gave the Warbound their own book at one point, although they might not have been called that.
Chaos War.
Scar, the son of Hulk, who, as it turned out, existed and survived the Cataclysm, he totally had his own book for a good long while there. He was cavorting with Micronauts and Galactus and things like that. These were a set of new characters that – people were not particularly interested in, unfortunately for them, but they gave it the old college try.
Yeah, that's true. I do remember World War Hulk, I remember because I wasn't reading this. I remember when World War Hulk came out, some website did like the characters that you, because it was something like the characters you need to know for World War Hulk because you didn't read Planet Hulk. Right. And they listed them all, and so they brought them all to Earth, and then I never saw them once again, and I don't even remember what their role was in World War Hulk. All I remember from World War Hulk is Doctor Strange gets his hands broken.
Demon hands, Doctor Strange. His hands are already messed up. Like, that's the point of
He already has. He already has broken hands from a drunken car accident, and now he's got broken hands from a Hulk fight.
If you watch NASCAR race, when the guys are about to crash, they let go of the steering wheel because they know that your hands and arms are going to get messed up. Doctor Strange should have been a bigger NASCAR fan.
this is not the only thing that happened in World War Hulk. You're forgetting about the 25 pages of the Sentry eating Captain Crunch out of the box in his underwear on the couch.
Well, it doesn't
on Life to Live.
Doesn't Hulk beat Black Bolt, but then Black Bolt, it turned out, was a Skrull because next summer happened?
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. So, all right.
He came and he said, I didn't come here to hear you whisper. I came to hear you scream.
I wanted to see more of Hulk as king. I thought Hulk had an interesting.
Yeah, that didn't last nearly long enough. That was.
Yeah.
Get to the sort of the King Conan the, part, and it doesn't.
Wouldn't it have been cool?
Like West Wing Hulk.
Wouldn't it be neat if World War Hulk never happened? Okay, first of all, that's cool. And then also, it'd be really cool if they just let him be King Hulk for like another year, kept him away from the Marvel Universe again for another year. I think. Because like I said, I think Planet Hulk is a really cool idea in concept and in story. And I'm glad to have read it, and I'm glad that I have that story in my brain. And yeah, some parts don't execute as well as I like. But to see King Ruler Hulk over all these people.
Dealing with irrigation problems.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like he hires middle management Red Skull to.
Well, that's kind of what he does. You see the Dune worm spike zombies right. Feeding off of him for a while. And he's like, I fixed that problem. And so I think.
I think it's really ambitious, and it's a really colorful story with a lot of interesting mythology, and you can read all the appendices in this, you know, trade paperback if you can track it down. But I think even though it went on for a long time, it's such an ambitious story that it sort of begs for more time. But then again, do you want to, you know, maroon Hulk in another world for that long and not have him on the table for, you know, for other things? And this is really, I think, not in Greg Pak's mind, but I think in, you know, Quesada's mind and the Marvel editorial, their mandate was, I think, really, it was all leading into World War Hulk, to have a storyline where it's the Hulk really having reason for a vendetta, and to have, you know, pit the Hulk against the entire Marvel universe, which is what World War Hulk is. And then I think they're not going to go the Planet Hulk route in the movies, but I think World War Hulk, if handled properly, could make for a really interesting Avengers movie.
I cut you off. You should say that again so you can actually.
No, I was just saying if the movies borrow anything from these storylines, and this is all one long interconnected thing, Planet Hulk, and there's like another trade paperback, which is like, you know, Road to Planet Hulk or Fallout from Planet Hulk, and then World War Hulk, it's all part Infinite Planet Hulks. I think if they borrow anything, I think World War Hulk is the thing to go with. Idea of betrayal.
I think part of the idea too, though, and this is just pertaining to this, but like there's something that's been coming up a lot in Marvel, and it's just like good guys fighting good guys. So you have Civil War fighting good guys, fighting good guys, World War Hulk. It's like Hulk fighting Avengers, and Secret Invasion. It's like who are the good guys? Who are the bad guys? We don't know. And so it's just like, I want to see the Hulk be a good guy with good guys.
It seems like what Mark Waid's doing.
Yeah. And that's what I like Mark Waid's.
It's what Kelly Sue DeConnick is doing in Avengers Assemble, for that matter.
It's true.
That is a lot to take in, isn't it, guys?
I mean, Hulk, you know, I always view Hulk as, you know, and this is meant with every possible allusion to his own origin, but he's a nuclear reactor.
Ryan's pitching his Hulk story.
No, this is not my Hulk story, but
okay, so he's a nuclear reactor.
This does actually tie into my Hulk story, but basically, if he's, you know, that is an incredible source of energy. If used properly and safely, that can be incredibly effective at powering entire cities for very low cost and low, you know, whatever. So
like put him on a treadmill and.
Right. So if you point him in the right direction and keep the reaction contained, Hulk is an incredibly effective tool. But if he's let go and let to be uncontrolled, then you have a meltdown and he just goes nuts and wrecks everything.
Okay. So in closing, is this a book that you would recommend to people, or with any, you know, any other considerations?
I would recommend this book to someone who had a pretty good feel for the Hulk already.
So they read the Chris Jones run.
I don't like, if somebody came up to me and said, I really loved the Hulk when I saw the Avengers last summer. What should I read? This is probably not what I would give them.
Mm. Or I'd say if someone knows Hulk, let's say that guy, there's someone that like loves Marvel Civil War. Like, I'm not that guy, but I know people who do love Civil War. I'd give them this.
What if
I think there's a lot of those fans out there that really enjoyed Civil War. So I think that's a large swath of the audience, I think.
Yeah, if you like Marvel Event comics, which there's a lot of people that do, I would give them this, you know?
I'd probably give them this before I would give them World War Hulk.
Yeah,
I don't think I'd give anybody World War Hulk.
That would be a good story if it didn't have to exist in a shared universe after it was over.
Because you get to be
about the middle of issue chapter two or whatever, and you go, oh, right, this all has to be put back in the toy box by the time this is over.
Mm.
The Hulk is not going to win. And then it's just sort of an exercise in.
Even though Hulk is strongest there is.
You brought up Hulk on the treadmill, which makes me think, could Hulk's sweat be good for anything?
Be good for giving you leukemia, I would imagine.
And on that note, that is our first Booksplode coming back. And if you have any suggestions for other books that we can talk about, you can write those in the comment section under this podcast, or you can send those to me at paul@ifanboy.com. And hopefully we'll be back with another one of these in a month. So I'm Paul. That's Jim.
Hi. Bye.
That's Ryan.
I think Hulk sweat would basically be radioactive Gatorade to me, and I'm out. Bye.
Yeah. Would it be purple or like neon green?
It depends on how angry he is.
And that's Timmy over there.
And I think bringing up Ziggy, I think Ziggy is the grown-up version of Charlie Brown, and that's all I have to say about that.
See you next time.